Greetings and welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Malin, joined by the whole crew here, Jacob Kanzler, John Roering, Simon Schuster, Jack Spencer, and Abigail Walls. And that's just in the order they're sitting around the room. No other order than that, or alphabetical or anything like that. Joining us a little later in the podcast, Jeff Timmer is going to be joining us. And he's going to be talking about the Republicans who, I don't know if he's ever supported Trump, but Jeff Timmer is going to be talking about Republicans who are distancing themselves further from Donald Trump after what happened Friday with the video that was on the Washington Post, among other places. But let's start out here. We've had some bad polling. Trump had a horrible weekend. Is this race over? Let's go around the room. Abigail Walls, is the presidential race essentially over? Yes or no?
Essentially, yes.
Jack?
Yeah, it's over, barring some incredible follow-up development.
Simon?
Well, I don't think you should ever count your chickens before they hatch, but for all intents and purposes, yes.
John?
I don't think it can be over yet. This has had so many ups and downs that I wouldn't be surprised if we have a surge back for Trump. I wouldn't be surprised if there's some shoe to fall for Hillary in terms of the WikiLeaks. There are other forces outside just the two of them and the standard electioneering stuff that you expect in presidential. So no, I wouldn't say it. And in the Republicans' down ballot, better hope it's not over, because if it's over, they could be hurting.
Jacob, is it over?
Yes, kind of along the lines of what Jack said, unless there's something crazy along the lines of what happened with Trump to what happened with what would happen with Hillary, then otherwise, yes.
I'm glad that John put in a different opinion, because I think this race is over. I think it's a done deal. And I would say that the reason I think it's a done deal is because I don't know where else Trump goes for votes, Abigail. I think that's kind of the problem here.
Yeah, I think if you're a strategist on either side of this question, it's a pretty boring next couple of months for you. I mean, I agree with John. I think these candidates are both very well disliked, profoundly disliked, and there are actors who, outside of the election for president, who may be motivated to pop in with their oppo or pop in with their little bit of information. But I just think in terms of strategy, picking up new voters, there's just nothing else really to go for.
Well, what's your thoughts, Jen?
I think the thing to look for now is what happens after this. I mean, we've seen some very odd polling that we wouldn't have expected in the past. After the last debate and then Trump taking an issue, Miss Universe, it was about a 2 on a 1 to 10 scale and turning it into an 8 by what he did, acting like an adolescent for 4 days after the debate. And he still really wasn't out of it in the polling after that. So I think what we have to do is watch, see at the end of this week here, is he going to start having trouble in places like Texas? Is he going to start having trouble in states that are just absolutely, you know, red as can be? If that starts to be happening, then I think you can really say it's over. But this is such an odd year that if he hangs on to all those red states, then you've got to say, okay. And the other thing that has occurred to me is, at what point does the bottom of the ballot possibly start helping Trump stay in it? It sounds bizarre, but at what point does people showing up to vote for their local
state rep
or whatever have them on that day tossing a presidential vote? It's bizarre.
Whoever thought we would be in this situation, Simon?
Oh, I'm sure very few people. But I think more than anything, this year is a year of realignment. And I think that more than anything now, from the Republican National Committee and other groups, what we're going to see is a move on their part, not necessarily to, you know, try to achieve a presidential victory, but to recalibrate, you know, their base constituencies and their demographics where they find most favor in a way that they can maintain some semblance of a majority in Congress and in state legislatures across the country.
Well, because, John, to your point earlier, I don't think that just because Trump is going to lose means that Republicans are going to get blasted up and down the ticket. I don't think that means that they necessarily lose Congress. You know, Senate's always kind of been up in the air. I don't think that it necessarily means that state Republicans are going to get wasted and that the Democrats are going to be a clean sweep. I guess I just don't see this as like an 08 situation.
Well, I think you've got to look at the Senate. I mean, there was talk where the Democrats were going to regain the Senate, then it was back to the Republicans, now it's back to the Democrats. I mean, that's balance and control in the U.S. Senate. It's a very important issue. What I was talking about is, you know, I before I say the race is over, I want to see what the polling says after his performance yesterday. I mean, obviously the first half hour was dominated by this audio tape. But other than that, I think he made some strong points in terms of hitting the marks that he wanted to hit. I don't think it was a bad debate performance on his part. So I really want to see what the polls do.
Jacob, if you are a Republican candidate and you're running for office, everybody's going to be running to you and say, well, what do you think? What do you think? And you're really stuck in a pickle, aren't you? I mean, you can distance yourself as much as you can, but you don't want to say, I'm not supporting the nominee. But then on the other hand, you don't want to say you are supporting him either.
Yeah, I mean, this is a weird year, and especially in terms of the reaction to the comments on Friday, which kind of took things to a different level of denouncing Trump. It seems like people were more than willing to denounce his comments, and some even said they were not going to vote for him. Others kind of took a more gray stance of just denouncing his comments and then just staying there. So maybe to your point, people were able to distinguish between Donald Trump, the Republican, and my local Republican. But obviously the Democrats are going to try to lump them together. Perhaps that won't be so successful. People can distinguish between the two.
All right, I want to switch gears here to the state Supreme Court race, because in the past, in Michigan, state Supreme Court races...
Is there a state Supreme Court race today, this year?
I had to go and check the sample ballots on the Secretary of State's website just to make sure, and indeed, there actually is. I know that's kind of hard to...
haven't heard much about them, though, have we?
Well, and that's kind of the problem. I don't remember a state Supreme Court race that has been so sleepy. I guess I saw some ads for Viviano and Larson the other day, and that was probably the first time that we've seen them. I think Simon's the only one in this room who's ever seen the Democratic nominees, Deb Thomas and
Frank Szymanski.
What's his name again?
Szymanski.
Okay. I think that's kind of the problem here, isn't it, guys? I mean, all right. So, and tell our listeners in what context you have seen the Democratic nominees.
The two contexts in which I've seen these two candidates, well, actually, I've only seen both of them in the same place once, but I've seen Deb Thomas most recently last week in the pre-rally for Bernie Sanders at Michigan State University. Now, of course, among liberal college students who are formerly supporters of Sanders, which is largely what this crowd was, I don't think that they're going to have any trouble, you know, deciding who to vote for on the Supreme Court. The other context in which I've seen them was the state Democratic Party convention.
And they kind of had to be there because that's where they were being nominated, right? So that was that was almost kind of a requirement. Jack, has this been, how surprising has this been? Because remember when Brewer was in charge in 2008 and Cliff Taylor just got pounded by Brewer? I mean, we couldn't take another step without running into Brewer driving around in Cliff Taylor's car.
Well, I think it's you could say it's especially so when you consider how few other things are going on. You have the presidential, which is something totally different, you know, really at the top. You don't have any of the ballot proposals that usually eat up a lot of money and time and attention. You basically have the House races, you have the presidential, and you would think that this would be a good year for the Democrats in particular to be putting some money behind their Supreme Court nominees, which would then force the Republicans to be doing so also. And instead, it's just sort of crickets chirping out there.
I wonder if the Supreme Court is almost a victim of its own success in that they have had such an amicable court the last two sessions that to insert politics in it would almost upset the apple cart to a certain extent. I mean, just think back to the last election in 2014. We had Kavanaugh had to be aged out, so he couldn't run again. So instead, we had Bernstein running. And even in that race, I know Redford was put up by the Republicans, but it was almost like, okay, we concede. We'll let Bernstein take over Kavanaugh's spot. And now we're in a situation where we've got two Democrats who are running. They were just basically picked out of a hat last minute. They let Deb Thomas run, even though Deb is always a candidate. We had one candidate who was actually put out there who was actually interested in the post in Plawecki. And then even before his wife died, he's like, I'm not getting any support, so I'm not going to be interested, right? I mean, that was what you saw, right, Jacob?
Yeah, he tried to make it a thing about not being able to compete with the money that would be going into you know, Viviano and Larson. But I think at the same time, he wasn't able to raise the money to put up with them. So there was some kind of lack of support there.
You want to say something, Abby?
Yeah, I almost think that when it comes to the Supreme Court, is it not sort of just nomination by party? Because I think the idea of multiple candidates from the same party for the Supreme Court duking it out is is essentially unappealing to anybody who seriously wants to be a judge. My sense.
So you're saying partisan bickering over Supreme Court is unseemly?
Oh, yeah, I can see if you've got multiple candidates from the same party, I could see preferring to lie low over the necessary catfighting it takes to beat out somebody on the same side of the ticket as you.
Or maybe the Dems just feel like it's a losing battle because both the Republican nominees are going to have incumbent written over their name under their names, and there is no real party designation on that Supreme Court.
I think I agree with you, Kyle, that collegiality in almost any governmental body is a good thing. But in the case of our state Supreme Court, especially for the Democrats on the Supreme Court, it has hurt them. When you look at their national partners in the U.S. Supreme Court and what you've seen in the last few years in terms of scathing dissents from Scalia, these things have energized conservative bases, and they've brought an enormous amount of attention to the importance of these people and the positions that they hold. I think for our state Supreme Court, you haven't seen that sort of devotion, and I don't think that there's been that sort of motivation behind it as a result. So while the collegiality is good for the functioning of the body as a whole, I think that for people on the Supreme Court like Richard Bernstein, it may end up hurting them because it prevents them from otherwise bringing attention to their own position.
Is this a swing away from Mark Brewer? I mean, from the Mark Brewer approach to things? You know, we've had the two different chairs since him, and how much criticism did he get inside the party for making the emphasis he put on the Supreme Court in what ultimately was a losing cause in terms of hanging onto the court? This may signal a swing away from putting attention on that for the time being. I wonder if that's partly what may be behind this, is that especially looking at this ahead of time, not knowing what was going to happen in the spring, that might be part of what's going on here.
All right, walking into the MERS World Headquarters right now, Jeff Timmer from Two Rivers Public Affairs. Thanks for joining us, Jeff.
Glad to be here, Kyle.
Well, you were active on Facebook over the weekend talking about what you heard with Donald Trump in regards to the Washington Post video. You weren't a big Trump guy anyway. You were a John Kasich guy, but your words were pretty strong.
Well, it's more than just this weekend. I mean, I've been, since he came down the escalator in June of 2015, an anti-Trump guy. It had nothing to do with John Kasich. It had nothing to do with support for any other candidate. It had everything to do with opposition to Donald Trump and where he stood politically and how he behaved personally.
And you think that he should drop out of the race, or the Republicans should remove him from the ballot?
I think that would have been, that is, to me, remains the prudent course of action. If the Republicans have any prayer to win, it's not going to be with Donald Trump. Before this latest story broke on Friday, he was dead man walking. I mean, now his campaign is a smoking crater in the ground.
Now, what can the Republicans do? Just from my basic readings, it looks like the Republican brass can get together, 168 people can get together and decide to remove him. But then there's a lot of uncertainty of what happens after that.
Yeah. I mean, practically speaking, it's not likely to happen. But what you're seeing is people symbolically cutting him loose. And I think you're going to see the RNC cut him loose. There's going to be a shift of resources away from the presidential campaign and away from the presidential candidate into the down ballot races. Because what's going to happen is you see, once the polling starts to really sink in and the real impact of hearing his words this weekend can be measured, it's going to get even worse than it is before. I mean, right, you have the Real Clear Politics average at, I don't know, about 5 points. 538 has it up to about 7 points right now. And this is before any of these polls, any of the impact of this weekend has been factored in. This race hasn't seen anything like what happened on Friday. When you look at the Twitter traffic, the Facebook traffic across the country, there's been a lot of things that have been out of the ordinary in this election cycle. This is one of the most out of the ordinary of the out of the ordinary. You know, I heard a commentator talking about, well, Bill Clinton this and Bill Clinton that, and when he was impeached and Monica Lewinsky. Had they had Bill Clinton on tape talking in a way about that or about Monica Lewinsky, or, you know, in the way that Donald Trump did, it would have been a whole different ballgame. And it's something about hearing his words in the cavalier way he used to describe sexual assault that caused a lot of people who were being good party soldiers and sticking by the nominee to fish and cut bait. And then there was a whole lot of people last night saying, oh, now this debate performance has these guys wishing they hadn't done that. They weren't doing that because they thought he was going to lose. They were were doing that because they thought he shouldn't win.
Now, would you say that Trump won? I argued earlier that I thought Trump won the debate, but it doesn't really matter because he's already down so much that it doesn't make a difference.
Yeah, I mean, winning or losing the debate last night is an irrelevant incident in the ponderance of evidence and in the course of the campaign.
Jack and I use football analogies. I said it's like scoring a touchdown with 2 minutes left and you're down 31-7. And Jack said it's like getting two first downs and you're down 77-0.
Yeah, but I don't think he scored a win. What he did last night was perhaps he delivered a lot of red meat to his supporters. He delivered some red meat to the Republican base who just hate Hillary Clinton. They don't like Donald Trump, a lot of them, a good number of them, you know, find him reprehensible, but they hate Hillary Clinton so much that they're going to hold their nose and think that Donald Trump is a better candidate. To them, he delivered what he needed to. But, okay, great, 35% of the vote is not enough to win. You know, so he did nothing last night to add to his total, to change the paradigm. Unless he does that in a big way, there's no way to win. The electoral path is gone after this last 72 hours.
So let's say if you're a traditional American conservative waking up Monday morning, knowing what has transpired this weekend, how are you feeling? And how is what has transpired this past weekend going to change how you feel waking up on the morning of November 8th?
I think you feel the same kind of contortions and angst that I feel about this. I think Hillary Clinton is an awful candidate, and I think she'll be an awful president. I don't think she's good at being a candidate. I don't think she was good in the debate last night. I don't think she's been good on the campaign trail. And none of that matters because she's going to win.
She's just the luckiest candidate right. for president ever. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I mean, she is. You could have made the argument that, you know, you look at Hillary Clinton and her popularity or lack thereof and say that she's one of the most unpopular, unliked presidential nominees ever. And the only reason she's going to win, the only reason either of them had a chance to win through this campaign is because they were running against the other one. Donald Trump is more unliked, and he's just, I think, unfit for office, and he's unfit for the party. And that's why I've had the opposition to him all along. I've said from day one, I would much rather work for the next 4 years to defeat Hillary Clinton for re-election than to risk what Donald Trump can do to the country and to the party.
So you're going to vote for her?
No.
Have you decided what you're going to do?
She's going to win Michigan by somewhere between 500,000 and 1,000,000 votes, and so I don't need to worry about what my vote will do in Michigan.
But are you going to vote on the president?
I haven't decided. I mean, there's plenty of good Republicans out there who I can write in.
And whether their name is formally out for consideration
right.
or not.
I'm going to vote for a Republican, and that's been my position all along, and that's why I oppose Donald Trump.
What do you think the impact is going to be down ballot? Because I would argue that in 2008, it was a lot different, that there was so much popularity for Barack Obama that Democrats just had a win behind their back. I don't think that's necessarily the case here.
I don't think we know yet. When you start to get a spread that's 6, 7, 8, 10 points nationally, or, you know, certainly here in Michigan, partisan candidates down ballot can only defy gravity so much. They can only run so far ahead of the nominee. The math just starts to work against them. And it becomes very difficult. And that's been one of my admonitions all along, was that the party needed to be much more strategic and careful and long-term about exactly the position we find ourselves in. What do we do to separate our candidates from Donald Trump so that we can save as many down-ballot candidates as possible? And I think that there are some candidates who've done that well across the country, some here in Michigan, others who are kind of running as generic Republican who are struggling to get name ID are going to have a real problem this year. And it could very well affect the House majority, could very well affect many county commissions and township and county offices and whatnot. I mean, I think that the big difference in, you look at 2008 when it was, you know, the bottom fell out for Republicans in the state, the difference there was about probably 4 points compared to, Mitt Romney did about four points better than McCain, and we had a decent election where things kind of turned out normal down ballot.
Prior to the previous 72 hours, mm-hmm. I think, you know, Kyle and I were talking, I think you're pegging the Democrats' chances in the state house of regaining control 40%. Has that 40% changed in your mind, do you think?
I think it's likely to. I don't think we've seen enough evidence yet, but I think it is likely to. The we were already heading toward the biggest gender gap in American political history. I think what you're going to see is Trump's support among all men, Republican men included, start to shrink a little bit. And it's going to expand among women, or Hillary Clinton's lead. And it's going to, I don't know that we've seen the bottom of this yet. It's going to take some time. And this isn't going to be the last thing that happens in this campaign. You know, he stood up there and said, I never did these things. Until somebody comes now forth and, you know, says that he did, or other tapes or other names come out. There's a whole lot of things that are going to happen. And I think there's a lot more that we don't know about him than we don't know about her. Everything about the Clintons, Bill, Hillary, everybody knows everything. I don't think we're going to get many revelations about them. I
mean, and they're smart enough not to get it caught on tape. I guess that's probably the other thing, too.
What would your advice be to a House candidate who, let's say it's a House candidate who has said, I don't like Donald Trump, but the candidate of the party, and up until now, that's been their position. What would your advice be to them now when people ask them about it?
Firmly and clearly differentiate themselves from him. Say, I don't support him. I'm not going to vote for him. I'm going to vote for I'm going to write in a Republican that I can, you know, have confidence that will reflect the values of the party in the country. And we need to make sure that you're voting Republican down ballot to provide that check to make sure that Hillary Clinton and the Democrats don't have unfettered control of government. And I think that would have been the wise strategy all along for the party nationally, to focus on keeping the Senate majority as the check to Hillary, not this pretense that Donald Trump had a chance to win.
Jeff Timmeries from Two Rivers Public Affairs, thanks for joining us on the podcast today.